I'm Phyllis Brandt, and the presentation that we're going to be doing today is called Life and Us, Juggler, Weaver, and Pitcher. What I will be doing this week and how this fits into it is taking a look at all the ways that we can be healthy when we are relating to other people, and how our own look at our own health will enhance the relationships that we might have with a spouse, children, relationships at work, parents, extended family, friends, all the kinds of people that we relate with and hopefully relate with in healthy kinds of ways. I just have two sayings on the board as sort of themes for us today. The first one is, we need to see ourselves as basic miracles and worthy of love. And Virginia Satir, who's a family therapist, has said that. And I like that thought a lot. The other one is, and I think the Babylonians were at Holden when they said, three things restore a person's spirits: beautiful sounds, sights, and the smell of bread. Because that's one of the most beautiful smells. Whenever I go by the dining hall, I smell that. So we're talking today about taking care of ourselves, and I think those are three really important ways to enliven us and make us feel good and feel healthy. Well, if you'll bear with me, I'd like to use those three images as a way of talking about how we look at life, and in particular our inner life, that part of us that is on the inside that we need to be conscious of and we need to continually nourish in terms of our being able to give to other people. The first of those is being a juggler. I don't think it's any news to you at all that to meet and honor all the commitments that you have chosen in your life is a juggling act. It is not easy to try to meet the commitments that we all choose to make and want to have in our lives. I'd like to suggest that we look at those commitments in terms of three: our commitment to God, our commitment to other people, and our commitment to ourselves. And I would suspect, if your experience is anything like mine, that the commitment to yourself is the one you hear about least. That we tend not to think of that commitment to ourselves or think of it as seriously as we do our commitment to God and our commitment to others. When you talk about ourself, I would like us to think of that as a gift that God has given to us. That it is who we are. It's all of who we are in all of our facets and our dimensions. It's our self that God has warmed with his love. It's our self that he has affirmed through his grace. It's our self that he honors daily with all the gifts that he gives us. And it's our self that he entrusts to us for our care in the same way that we are to care for all of God's creation. I like the prayer, if you remember, in the Lutheran Book of Worship in the offertory, when we say, we offer with joy and thanksgiving what you have first given us, and what comes next?
Ourselves.
And our time and our possession. And I like that thought that God has given us that self. And so we can think of it maybe as actually taking it out of us and realizing that God has put it in the palm of our hand. And think of that as a gift that we look at, and so we can focus on it. If we have been given that gift, then that is what we offer back to God. And if that is a gift of God's creation for us, then certainly we need to take care of it. And I think that helps with any thoughts of, oh, this sounds narcissistic, this sounds selfish, this sounds self-involved. No, that is a gift of God that he has given to us. And it is our obligation, in my opinion, to take care of that in the same way that we care for other people. And I'd like to suggest that we don't talk about that enough, and I'd like to make that our focus for today, and to see that in terms of our spirituality, that caring for ourselves is not separate from our spirituality or our theological concepts, but is very much a part of it. How many of you have tried juggling? How many of you are successful at juggling?
Two.
You can do two? Well, I think that's great. My son has a birthday a week from today, and so before I went to Holden, before I came up here, I mailed him a birthday present, and I included, along with the more practical clothes that I bought this little set of juggling. They're not really balls because they're squares, and they were made out of fabric, and they were really tightly packed, like beanbag type things, and they're all brightly colored fabric, but they're square, and it comes with a little book called Juggling for the Klutz. And my son's not going to be offended by that. Well, I decided that I would try it before I sent it to him, just to see, you know, I looked through the book and I followed the directions. It was really hard to do it. I absolutely cannot juggle. I don't know if I had round balls, I don't think it'd be any easier. I think the reason they put them in squares is they don't go rolling all over your house when you drop them. At least they stay, even when you drop them, they go thud and they sort of stop. So at least you can pick them back up. Well, what I found out was juggling was really hard. What I also know about my life, and I suspect yours, is the juggling that we have to do in terms of all the commitments that we make is just equally as difficult. And so it isn't easy, as I said. But when you think about juggling your commitments to God, your commitments to others, and your commitment to yourself, my thought is don't let yourself fall on the floor and forget about it. But that's an important part of who you are, an important part of being God's person, is to keep yourself up, to keep yourself cared for. Let's go on to the next image, and that's of a weaver. I feel that God gives us the warp and the woof of our lives, the structure, the underpinnings. And I feel that we are in active participation with God in weaving the tapestry that becomes our life, that becomes our life service to the world. Well, as a weaver, you would have a choice of colors, textures, design, pattern, different threads. You have that ability to choose what you're going to put into your life. Who are the people that are going to be in your life? What are the experiences you want in your life? What growing do you see for yourself in your life? So if you would, imagine yourself as a weaver and you're sitting down at your loom and you're beginning to think about, what am I going to weave into this tapestry? How do I express who I am to make this design in my life that will be productive for others and of service to others? So if we're the weaver, then I think we have to have a sense of being healthy as a weaver. And we have to take care of ourselves to produce the most creative life that we can come up with. So once again, the message is, God wants us to take care of ourselves. It's a part of His design for us. And it's a part of our caring for other people. The third image is that of a pitcher. I was a potter for 5 years, and I really felt the pitchers were the most fun thing to make. And aside from the fun part of it, I always felt there was something spiritual about it, and it wasn't until I was thinking about this image that I began to figure out why I felt that way. I didn't know what it was at the time. But there was something about making a pitcher, and you form it like a cylinder, and then you make this motion to make the spout. Later you add the handle. And there's different shapes you can use. But when you think about that image, there was always that openness to receive that I saw in that picture. But the purpose of that picture was to pour out, to hold something, and then to give out. And there was something about that, as I said, that had a spiritual feeling for me. And I think that's part of why I enjoyed making them so much. Our theme, our Holden theme, earthen vessels. A pitcher, then, for me, is something that is sacred in the sense of the service it does, but it comes from ordinary clay. You take clay just like any other kind of thing you're going to do. You put it on the wheel, it's formed, it dries, it's fired, and then it's put into service. And that's how I like to think about our lives, too. Another image for our lives. That we are pitchers that give out. Pictures that give out in service to others. Have any of you read The Gift from the Sea by Anne Morrow Lindbergh? Good. It's an excellent book on caring and taking care, nurturing ourselves. And she uses that image of the pitcher and talks about us as being all poured out at times with nothing left to give. I'd like you to think about the opposite of that. Think of a time in your life when you gave out of a sense of being full, a rich feeling that you could generously give to another person, maybe planned a surprise birthday party, cooked a wonderful meal, a holiday meal, and you enjoyed so much the preparation because you knew that the enjoyment the people were going to have. Or maybe you gave a gift of your ear, listening, time, attention, caring for somebody, expressed in attention to them. Just for a minute, think about a time when you gave out of fullness, when your pitcher was full, and you could freely and generously give to someone. Think about how it felt, that sense of fullness and warmth of being able to give to another person. And you didn't feel depleted. In fact, you felt enriched from the experience. Now think of the opposite. Sometime when you were extremely frazzled, tired, fatigued, burned out, the way that we sometimes get, and yet you gave because you had committed yourself to it or said you would or felt you had to go through with it. And think about how that giving felt. You might even feel it in your body, that aching, tired kind of feeling. Are you feeling a contrast in your terms of these two examples? For me, a time, the second one, of not being able to give out of fullness, but giving out of because I felt I needed to, was the day after my mother died. She died on Good Friday, and so the Saturday before Easter, we were going to be coloring eggs. And my sons at the time were 4 and 6, and my daughter was just a few months old, so she wasn't involved in it. But I remember as we were coloring the eggs, I thought, I can't believe it is so tiring to color eggs. I didn't remember any other time feeling so tired in that activity. Well, as I thought about it, it wasn't the coloring of the eggs that was so exhausting. It was I who had come to this activity physically exhausted and emotionally distressed and in the grieving of my mother's death. I didn't have much to give, and so I just felt this difficulty in carrying through with this, and yet I wanted to do it, but it wasn't an easy way of giving. And I'm hoping that that will help you think about how important it is to fill yourself up and so how easily and freely you can give. Well, let's think about a car as an analogy in terms of why it's important and why my thought about taking care of yourself is a part of your spirituality and it's a part of being involved with others. Why do you have a car?
To get you to someplace.
That's why I have one. Yeah, I have a car because I want to get places. Some people have cars for status, but I think the basic reason we have cars is because we have to go places, we have to go to work, we need to go to our volunteer positions, visit friends, we need to buy groceries for our family, all the kinds of things that we do in our daily life, and our cars help us with that. Well, is having a car and focusing on a car the main part of your life?
Oh, No, not most women.
No, and my old Honda would tell you that's definitely not the focus in my life, is to take care of the car. So it's not the focus of your life to take care of a car. But what would happen if you never watched the gas gauge, you didn't take care of the oil, you didn't look at the tires, you didn't get it tuned up and care for the engine? What's going to happen?
It's
going to break down?
You're
getting
kicked out now.
Okay, so yeah, unless you have a friendly person that's going to take care of the car for you, your car is going to let you know when you have neglected it. And you may have these great possibilities of what you're going to do in the world. You're going to go out one morning and you're going to get in your car and your car is going to go, we're not doing this today because you have neglected the car. Well, the car then, the energy and the time spent on taking care of your car is not your overriding, consuming goal in life, but it helps you to do some things you want to do. And if you think about the same way for yourself, you are not the focus of your life. You're not taking care of yourself, and that's the end, dead end, the main purpose of your life. But by taking care of yourself, just like taking care of your car, you are enabled to do things that you could do out in the world and honor your commitments to God and to your neighbors. So the point I'm making is that taking care of ourselves is not selfish. It is not self-involved. It is something that enables us to juggle all those commitments that we have. It enables us to weave the most creative and productive life of service in the world. And it helps us to keep our pitchers full, or at least partially full, so that when we're giving out to other people, it can be done with joy and not with just being drained and depleted. Okay, so what we need to do then is think about how are we going to self-care, self-nurture, keep ourselves active and running and tuned up and filled up. There's two words. Let's just think of the two words today as a way of focusing on that. One is attitude, and the other is action. And I think attitude comes first. I think the attitude that we have of giving ourselves permission to care for ourselves, to think about what do we believe about that? What are our thoughts? What are our thoughts about this self that we're holding in our hand as a gift from God? What are my thoughts about that, and how can I encourage myself to care for, to care? One thing I'd like to suggest is that you can only contribute health to a relationship, let's say a children and parent relationship or a spouse relationship. The relationship that you have with another person is kind of like a third entity. Two people, and the third one is the relationship. This relationship that you create with another person is only as healthy as the people who are in that relationship. Two unhealthy people do not create a healthy relationship. And so the idea, you know, the teenagers that grow up, you know, if you listen to a lot of the songs, the idea is that you're only halfway there, you only exist as a half, and you're going around looking for that other half. Where in the world is that other half that's going to latch on to me, and the two of us together will become one person or one unit? Well, that's really quite inaccurate, because what we really need are two singly healthy people to contribute to a healthy relationship. Now, what can happen? They're both arrows showing that they contribute to a healthy relationship. If one person is not healthy, and I'm going to draw like sort of a half of a circle, let's say that this person is addicted to substances. You probably know enough about addiction to know that when a person is addicted to a substance, their energy is not going anywhere else as strongly as to that substance. An addiction is stronger than love. And so the person who's addicted is not contributing all that much health to the relationship. So we'll put a broken line. There are other kinds of addictions that take away from the health of a relationship. They could be addictions to processes. Processes such as gambling, workaholism, religious addiction, sexual addictions, shopping, compulsive busyness. They're addicted to the high that they get from this process that they're going through. The process of sometimes creating chaos. People can become addicted to a chaotic environment and keep creating that because of the high that they get from that. But what that is a way of avoiding a relationship. And so that person is not contributing health to the relationship between the two people. So the point is that we each need to be as healthy as we can be so that we are enhancing any relationship that we have with other people. Another reason it's important to have a self-nurturing attitude toward ourselves is that wherever we go, that's where we are. We can say, well, I really don't like how things feel in my life, so I'm going to change houses, I'm going to change jobs, I'm going to move to a different part of the country. I'm going to move out of the country. I'm going to change my marriage partner. Well, no matter what change you make, you're still going to be there. And so you're not going to get away from yourself. Yourself is the longest-term companion of your life. So wherever you go, there you're going to be. Yourself is also the best friend you can have, if you will allow it to be that way. We're talking about a self-nurturing attitude, and that includes unconditional love and acceptance for who we are. Remembering ourselves as God's gift, as God's creation, God loves you, and so there's nothing wrong with loving yourself. You're loving something that God has created. Loving ourselves, valuing ourselves, means that we matter and we value ourselves wherever we go. It isn't you value yourself just in your home, but you're putting yourself down in your head at work or in a social situation. You're valuing, you're honoring yourself wherever you go. Well, how do we do that? How do we have that self-nurturing attitude? One thing we can do is to ask ourselves, lovingly and gently, what we can do for ourselves that would feel good. And that's really being part of that tune-up, like a car, to find out what is it that we need. You know, well, my car starts making noises, I never have a clue what it is, although I'm getting a little better at it. But, you know, you're kind of like that, too. You're kind of feeling like, ooh, my carburetors aren't working quite right, or, you know, something needs fixing. Well, there's a lot of things you can think about as possibilities. So this is kind of a mechanics manual on yourself. These are some things that we need to check on to see if we're meeting, and I call it our daily needs, because the more we meet these needs each day, the healthier we will be. And I will go through them quite quickly because I think some of this might be review, but I want it to be a reminder of all the possible things that we haven't attended to that can promote and enhance our sense of well-being. First one is air, and that might be taking action to be sure you're not in a smoking area, like on an airplane or at work, if you're allergic to smoke. I'm allergic to smoke, so I think about that. It might be opening the window, getting fresh air, opening the window at night if you need it, but taking care of your needs for that fresh air in your lungs. Second one on our list is food, and by that I would mean nutritious food, food that builds your body, gives you strength, and maybe it even means giving up some of that stuff that you like to eat but it's not so good for you, or caffeine maybe if that isn't good for your system. Water. Lots of water. I think a nurse told me how many glasses we need a day, but I've forgotten. I think it's like 8 or something.
8 to 10.
Yeah. Okay. We need that to keep our systems working. Next is touch. We all need, as babies, and we still continue to need as adults, we need hugs, we need touches, we need that physical contact of another body, of another person. And so we need to find that, be open to that. Freedom from discomfort. That would be things, maybe for women, not to wear uncomfortable shoes. It might be putting your feet up, or if you have a backache, you know. I just got a letter today from my sister, and they bought a new mattress, and now she says her husband has a backache. So she said they had a 30-day guarantee, and they may have to take it back and get a softer one. He's had a lot of back surgery and probably has to be quite careful about what kind of mattress. So she was really disappointed because they've been looking forward to having these great nights of sleep, and because they had this, she said they called it a sagging hammock before that they were sleeping in. So freedom from discomfort, taking steps to eliminate discomfort that you don't need to have in your life. And going on with our list of needs, sleep. Ask any mother with a new baby, and she would probably be able to tell you what it feels like to be on a sleep deficit. How many of you remember that with, you know, oh, when will I ever get a full night's sleep, you know, thinking that would never happen again. And how, you know, how that can affect how you view life. It can affect you in really important ways. Kinesthetic movement. How many of you have really sedentary jobs where that is not a part of your normal work? Where you have a job where you sit all the time. You don't really have the chance to move around. Okay, I think a lot of us in these times of our life, in this time in our society, have sedentary jobs. So we have to find a way to get kinesthetic movement, walking, running, jogging, aerobics, swimming, or whatever you do, to provide that for yourself. You have to think about it. Well, how am I going to put that in my life? Because it's not built into my workday. Affection and love, for sure, are ways that we need to enhance our life. And not only the giving of affection and love, but the receiving, that we have to be able to take in affection and love from other people. And sometimes I think that's a little harder. It's easier for us to give it out, and we don't always let it in. Respect for ourselves would include, what are the things that make me feel good? Maybe using even the word passion, like a kind of music or a kind of art or a kind of sports, you know, going to a certain kind of team games and so forth. What is it that I, as an individual, am unique and interested in and keeps me feeling alive? Respect for that in my life and putting it in my life. Skill and competence. We need to have a sense of mastery that we can do things well. Can you remember those kind of days where absolutely everything went wrong? You know, it's like no matter what you did, it was just like falling over your feet or nothing worked out. Well, on those kind of days, your need for skill and competence hasn't happened. Some days I feel like I might as well just go to bed and start over on the next day because I'm just not going to pull that day out. Well, that's a deficit in skill and competence. Sometimes you feel that way when you start a new job, don't you? You know, you think, oh, I haven't got this. I feel like I don't know anything about this job. And you come home. My daughter just started a job, and she said she now knows that you have to give. She says, now I know I have to give myself 3 days, because she started other jobs. She was scooping ice cream at Baskin Robbins last year, one thing she's learned from different jobs is that don't totally give up on the first day when you come home and you can't remember how to do this and who was what and all the different kinds of things that the job entailed. So give yourself time. But that's the feeling that we do need to have, a skill and competence. These needs are higher on the scale of our needs. Understanding and enlightenment. We need to have something that stretches our mind, something that gives us the feeling that we've used our brain cells, something that helps us in concepts or ideas. Spiritual well-being, in terms of our connection with God, what are we doing each day to enhance that feeling of connectedness with God and our understanding of how we fit into God's plan and our own sense of closeness to God each day, to do something to enhance that. Power and choices. Sometimes we have to say no. Sometimes we have to say yes. But it doesn't feel good to not have any choices or never to indicate any choices in our life. And it might be one that we haven't thought about. You know how you just feel like you're kind of running from one thing to another and you've never stopped to think, do I really want to do this? Sometimes just calling or telling somebody on a Friday night, you know what, I'm going to just go home, get a video, and go to bed by 8:30. And say no to the party or to something that you didn't want to do because you're just too tired after the end of a work week. But that's expressing power, expressing choices. And the last in our scale of needs, that if we met these every day, we would be in our best possible frame of filled pitchers, is appreciation of nature, beauty, and the arts. And I think it's easy to meet these needs at Holden. I think that's one reason people come here and feel refreshed, is because a lot of these are built into or as possibilities. And to take that as a clue, I know it's not as easy to provide all that when you're at home, but to think about what that does for you and how refreshed and how good you feel, how full you feel from that. Okay, so that point was to ask ourselves, what do I need? Is there something on here that I haven't been meeting that I need to look at to do for myself? Another way for us to nurture ourselves, to take care of ourselves, is when we're hurting, when we're in a time when something has happened and we're really in some pain, what do we need to do for ourselves? I had a friend right before I came up to Holden who had to go to court to provide some child support money for her daughter, and it was a really awful experience. She said that the other attorney really made some untrue statements about her willingness for her daughter to see her ex-husband, and had really put her in a bad frame, and really it wasn't fair to her. She was feeling pretty ragged and raw after this court experience. And she went to a person who gives massage, and she gave herself an hour of nurturing touch and care in a calm atmosphere, and she said she was amazed how much better she felt. I invited her the next day to come over to an art fair at Gig Harbor because I thought that would also help her get some balance back in her life, and she told me that she probably wouldn't have been able to do that for herself in the past, but she was really amazed how much better she felt and how more quickly she was able to get her feet back on the ground and put the whole thing into some kind of perspective. So allowing ourselves to give ourselves what we need when we're in pain. It might mean calling a friend. It might mean going over to someone's house and saying, "Do you have some time? I need to talk." Whatever it is that would help you with in that time. Another point about self-nurturing. That is, how many of you have ever been a coach? Have you ever coached Little League or any kind of team? Well, how many of you have had a coach, have been and played on a team? Well, you know what coaches do? They give you pep talk, they give you encouragement, they give you support, they put things in a positive way to help you be able to get through a learning experience. Well, what about being your own coach? What about walking around with an imaginary Walkman plugged in and telling yourself good things, encouraging things? Yes, I can do that. Yes, I can handle this. I was in Central Oregon playing tennis the week before with my sister the week before I came to Holden, and there happened to be a coach with a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old right next to us. And so as I was playing tennis, and I am not a good tennis player, I play once a year whenever we go to Central Oregon to my uncle's cabin, but I heard this coach, and it almost made me play better, although he wasn't even saying anything to me, but it was just the tone, that encouraging, that supportive kind of tone that he was using with these kids made me actually feel more positive about playing. And I had this idea about us doing that for ourselves and allowing ourselves to feel coached and encouraged. And one other point about self-care, and that is when we make a mistake, every once in a while we tend to do that, when we make a mistake, to say to ourselves, "You know, I'm probably going to make another one. I've made other mistakes." And not to be so hard on ourselves. To not put ourselves down, to say, "God, I was such an idiot to do that." You know, it's so easy to say that. "I was so stupid." And we use those words on ourselves. We probably wouldn't use them on anybody else. You know, we would say, "Gee, that's not really very kind." And yet we do it to ourselves very easily. And in our heads, we don't allow ourselves... often we don't allow ourselves the freedom to make mistakes. I would like you right now to find a person right near you in twos, and I would like you to, just for a few minutes, and we'll get right back to it, but to share one way that you have taken care of yourself physically, mentally, emotionally, or spiritually in a very recent time. Think of something that you did to care for one of these needs, to take care of that inner life that we're talking about nurturing. And just share that with each other, and then we'll share some of that together in a big group. So just right now, pair off in twos, or if it doesn't come out even, you can have threes. Don't make sure nobody's left out. Okay, find a partner and share what you have done to take care of yourself. Okay, I hear lots of chatter around. I'd like to have some of you share what you either said or heard from your partner, ways that you've taken care of yourself. Let's just kind of throw them out quickly. Okay, back there.
Coming here.
Okay, coming to Holden was a way of nurturing and taking care of your inner self. Okay, another one over here.
Well, that's what we were, the four of us were talking about, was sharing. All the things that you've listed there, even with the art and the crafts, and the understanding, enlightenment in the Bible study and all that. So you're getting all of that by coming to Holden.
Right, so you've got the whole list. And if you pursue that, you can meet all those needs in one day.
Right.
Okay. All right, another one maybe that's not so comprehensive, maybe a more specific one that you've done.
You said bike riding, I've been doing it. I've been playing tennis.
Good.
So that's the first time I've done it.
So you've given yourself some time in the summer to play tennis.
So we both did physical things.
Good, and that is so important. Those endorphins really get going when you... Okay, another one.
I got a lot of encouragement out of reading a book, Being the Best by Dennis Whitley, and I would recommend it highly to everybody.
Being the Best by Dennis Whitley. Okay, great. Anybody else who wants to share anything that they've done to take care of themselves?
Just took a nap this afternoon.
Took a nap. Oh, I love it. That's one of my favorite things to get me going. Yeah, and how often we can't do that on our normal work day. And you go through a sort of a blurry afternoon because you just really want to have that snooze. Okay, good. Well, you guys are all on your way to knowing how to take care of yourself. I'd like to add another point to self-nurturing, and that is that sometimes we have to remove obstacles that are there maybe from our past. Sometimes they're almost unconscious kinds of things that get in the way Do we have to go out?
Yes.
No, we stay unless there's local.
Can we keep talking? It doesn't look like anybody is. Well, self-care is to certainly take care of ourselves in case of fire.
No red light.
No red light. I guess we're able to go on then. Okay, we were talking about removing obstacles that get in the way of honoring and valuing who we are. I'd like to give you an example of that from a friend. When I was living in Southern California in Santa Monica, I had a friend named Kathy. And we were both potters, and I had a studio and a kiln, and she didn't. And so she came over to my studio to glaze her pots, and then I would fire them in my kiln. So we had a lot of conversations over the pottery glazing and so forth. And our children were friends, and we were godparents, each of us, for one of the other's children. And probably the phrase that I remember more from Kathy than any other phrase is she would say, "What are we going to do when we grow up?" She used that a lot. And at the time, we both were mothers of young children, and it was kind of like a joke, you know, just kind of, we'd kind of laugh. And well, the years went along, and she moved to the East Coast, and I moved to the Northwest. And it got to be, when we'd see each other, or when she would say it in a letter, it didn't seem so funny to me anymore, because I thought, there is a point where you do have to grow up. I mean, you can laugh about it, but, you know, maybe you need to make a decision. And she tried a lot of different careers, and she's very intelligent and capable of probably a variety of things that she could do really well. And although she tried them, it never seemed to be right. And she'd try something for a while, and then she'd kind of not stick with it. And it puzzled me. I wasn't sure what that was all about. Last spring, she flew out from D.C. and was in Seattle for a conference, and we went out for lunch. And she said, "I figured it out." She said, "I went to therapy, and I finally figured out why I couldn't grow up, or why I didn't know what I wanted to do when I grew up." And I said, "Well, tell me. I'm real curious." She said, "Well, it's so simple." I said, "Well, a lot of times those kind of things are." But I was going, tell me. I'm really curious. You know, what is this, the answer to this puzzle? And she said, "What I figured out with my therapist's help was that I never could do anything right in my mother's eyes. Nothing was ever good enough or right with her. And so that's why I didn't want to choose and really say, I'm going to do this career, because of my fear that if I chose it and said this is what I want to do, it wouldn't be approved by my mom." That's what I mean by removing the obstacles. And sometimes we do need help with that, or reading, or searching. Why is it maybe that we can't honor a part of ourselves? Why can't we value ourselves in some way? And it may have, there may be real strong clues in our past. Okay, so removing obstacles that get in the way of our loving ourselves. And the third point on self-care, self-nurturing, is to affirm the positive. When I look around in this room and the people that I know and those of you that I hope to get to know, there's just such an incredible amount of talent and capabilities and competencies and qualities. I mean, you guys are just oozing with them. But I think sometimes other people see them in us more than we do in ourselves. Especially if we do something well. If you play tennis or ride a bike well, it's kind of like falling off a log. You don't think about that might be hard. So the skills and the abilities that you do and have, you may not even be as conscious of it. But I think we need to be conscious of it. And we need to say, not that I'm puffed up about this, but this really is a gift and a strength that I've been given. It's not me, it's this gift that I have and I can use it, and it's okay to affirm that. I think sometimes we don't even take compliments in. We kind of deflect it by giving one right back, and so you don't let it come, you don't really let it sink in. I'd like to suggest that the next time somebody says something positive or a compliment for you, that you think of it like a cup of tea. Even if you don't like tea, go along with the idea of this lovely, steamed, savory-smelling tea that you're going to just let in. You're going to drink it in. You're going to let it warm you all the way down. And think of a compliment as that warming and soothing and affirming kind of intake. Well, here I'm going to give you an assignment. I want you, with the partner that you had before, to each of you give the other a compliment. But here's the rules. There's only two answers that you can have when the person gives you a compliment. One answer is, thank you, I think so too. And the other one is, thank you, would you say that again? Now, it might not be easy to do, but you can just say, she made us do this. She said we had to say that. Okay, with the person that you were with or in the group, if some of you were in a group, give a compliment and listen for that person to say, thank you, I think so too, or thank you, say it again. Okay, go. Okay, it's fun to look around because I'm seeing Cheshire Cat smiles, and I'm seeing kind of warm glow, you know, almost like in a little bit of embarrassed glow on some of your faces. Okay. Now, you may not be able to pull that off, you know, out in the real world, but just think of it that way, and to think about letting that compliment and that affirming of who you are and what your strengths are. And let that in. You know, don't deflect it. Let yourself warm up. So that's affirming the positives, the strengths that you have, and letting yourself be warmed by that and that recognition. And the last point in taking care of ourselves, in filling up our pitchers, is, I think, to have a healthy perspective. And by that I mean not believing things that are going to trip us up. I think we can cause ourselves a lot of unhappiness needlessly by faulty beliefs that we might have. For example, if somebody here left, I could think, oh, they didn't like me. In reality, they might have had to go to the bathroom. You know, and I could stew all night thinking, oh, I wonder what I said that bothered them. You know, I could just a lot of needless energy that we can expend in ways we don't need to. Some of those beliefs that we might have that are not, or that these are beliefs that we have that I think give us a healthy perspective. Everybody doesn't have to love me. It's okay to make mistakes. Like, how many times have you lost your keys in your life? You know, it's part of life, you know, to lose your keys. I decided that finally what I needed to do is put a car key in my wallet. so that if I locked them inside, then I always had another one.
That doesn't help me because I leave my personal car locked.
Maybe you need it with a string around your neck.
It's very embarrassing when you have a phone in your car and you're suddenly locked out. I bought a magnet that's underneath the bumper, and I've been locked out 3 times and saved myself $75 by putting that little. Yeah,
there's a time when we need to take actions. You know, we can just keep saying, well, it's okay to make a mistake, but there's also things maybe we can do.
You need to buy a car that you have to lock with a key when you get out.
Yeah.
Then you got the key in your hand.
But we really set ourselves up when we have some kind of a perfectionistic idea that, you know, gosh, if anybody found out that I blew it or didn't do something right, it's just going to be disastrous. It's going to be awful. It's the end of the world. You know, you're going to get an ulcer if you live like that. Other people are okay, and I'm okay. Not the idea that everybody out there is not okay. You're not going to get along. Your relationships with other people and your feeling of how you feel about life is going to be affected if you don't believe other people are okay or if you don't believe you are okay. I don't have to control things. You know, actually, we don't really run things. And if things go wrong in your household, it's not your fault sometimes. You know, sometimes the hot water just runs out. Or, you know, sometimes you do run out of milk and eggs. But I don't have to control things. It's okay. I am responsible for my day. It's not that other people make you happy. You are responsible in the sense of how you react to things. It's not that other people have to do what you need to have done. I can handle it when things go wrong. I'm not real good at that one. I can work on that. I'm kind of panicky sometimes when I think about, because I'm so unmechanical. There's probably nobody lower on the mechanical scale than I am. So when something goes wrong, it's like, I don't even know what to do. But I'm learning that I can handle it. I'm finding ways, like, you know, with the keys, you find ways to cope. It's important to try. I'm a school counselor, and it bothers me when kids that are seventh graders don't want to take an art class because they don't know if they can get an A in it. Yeah, the parents have put a lot of pressure on them for their grades, and it doesn't even matter for college when you're in at least an art area for seventh grade grades. You know, it's not a transcript that's going to be. Oh. I think it's important to try, to give ourselves the chance to try different things without putting, putting that kind of pressure on ourselves. I am capable. You know, there are things. We all are capable. We're not all capable in all ways. We're put together with different kinds of skills, but you are basically a capable person or you wouldn't have gotten to this point in your life. And you can change. How you were at age 20 is probably not how you are at age 30. At least I hope not. And by age 40, if you're still like you are at age 20, you know, what's been the value of all that time for you? So seeing yourself as changed, you know, you can say, well, that is how I used to say, how I used to believe, or I used to think. But now I think in a different way, and that's okay to change. And just like other people are okay, other people are capable too. You don't have to solve everybody else's problems. You can be pretty unhappy if you think that the whole family is dependent on you to solve every problem. You're taking away power from other people when you do that. So by believing that other people are capable, you can help and support them, but not do it for them, is a healthy way to look at it. So the way we believe affects how we think. How we think affects our emotions. Our emotions affect our actions. So we need to think in healthy ways with some perspective to help us along the way. We're just about out of time. What I'd like you to do in terms of action, remember we talked about, we're talking about a self-nurturing attitude about ourselves. And we also need to take action for ourselves. And you're probably all already thinking about this, because we've talked about how Holden provides us these opportunities. But what I want you to do with the person that you talked to before, persons, is to decide what you're going to do in the next 24 hours. So that means by 4:58 tomorrow, on Tuesday, something that you will have done to meet one of your needs, to take care of yourself physically, emotionally, spiritually, and make that commitment or make that statement to the person that you're with. Okay, let's just do that. Think about something that you're going to do in the next 24 hours to take care of yourself. It might even be something just in your head. I'm going to allow myself to think about my life and how am I doing as a juggler? How am I doing as a weaver? And how's my picture been before I came here? You may even reflecting about that is a way of taking care of yourself. So it doesn't have to be that you're going to jog 17 miles tomorrow down the road and back. It can be something more introspective. But do that right now. Talk to the person that you were with and make a statement about something you're going to do for yourself. And then I'll call you back and we have one quick little closing thing I'd like to do. Okay, so talk to your partner. I'm not going to be able to give you very much time for this. I think the dinner bell is going to be ringing in just a very short time. If you see that person, tomorrow, ask them if they did it. If you see the person tomorrow, ask them if they did it. I'd like to read just something as a way of concluding. Just some thoughts about the journey, the tapestry that we're weaving, the juggling act of our life, and some ideas about that. If you have to go to get your kids or whatever for dinner, go ahead. But I'd like to just read something called The Station. Tucked away in our subconscious is an idyllic vision. We see ourselves on a long trip traveling by train. Through the windows, we drink in the passing scene of flatlands and valleys, of mountains and rolling hillsides, of city skylines and village halls. But uppermost in our minds is the final destination. On a certain day, at a certain hour, we will pull into the station. Bands will be playing, flags waving. Once we get there, the pieces of our lives will fit together like a completed jigsaw puzzle. How restlessly we pace the aisles, damning the minutes for loitering, waiting, waiting, waiting for the station. When we reach the station, that will be it, we cry. When I'm 18, when I have a new Jaguar, when I put the last kid through college, when I reach the age of retirement, I shall live happily ever after. Sooner or later, we must realize there is no station. No one place to arrive at once and for all. The true joy of life is the trip. The station is only a dream. It constantly outdistances us. Relish the moment is a good motto. It isn't the burdens of today that drive people mad. It's the regrets over yesterday and the fear of tomorrow. Regret and fear are twin thieves who rob us of today. So stop pacing the aisles and counting the miles. Instead, go on more hikes, eat more ice cream, go barefoot more often, swim more rivers, watch more sunsets, laugh more, and cry less. Life must be lived as we go along. The station will come soon enough. Thanks, and take care. Thank you.